Hey, good morning. Happy Easter, everybody. It is great to see all of you today. First, let me just start by saying thank you. Thank you. Thank you for working with us, being flexible. I know we don't normally, it's kind of an odd thing to have to get a reservation to come to church, I know, but we knew we'd have more people here today than we've had in over a year just to manage the crowd, get everybody in and make all that work well. Thank you. We have people in this service, this service at capacity, I think outside. We've got a lot of people joining us outside. As well as always, everybody online, welcome. Glad that you're a part of our gathering this morning. You know, Easter Sunday is always, by far, my favorite Sunday of the year. I love Easter Sunday, and there's a lot of reasons why I love Easter Sunday. For one, it kind of actually makes my job a little easier because I don't really have to worry about what I'm going to talk about. It's kind of already decided, you know. I mean, throughout the year, we give a lot of teaching meetings, planning meetings. What series are we going to do? What are we going to communicate? Easter, it's like talking about Jesus raised. I mean, that's kind of it. It makes my job a little easier. But the thing I love about Easter probably as much as anything else is I just think it is absolutely the perfect time for anybody or everybody who's ever thought about believing in Jesus to finally and officially believe. And the reason I think it's a great Sunday to decide to believe in Jesus is because Easter, without any doubt, is the centerpiece of Christianity. It is the centerpiece of Christianity. We've been in this series for the last 8 weeks, actually, called Believe, and we've been walking through the Gospel of John, looking at seven signs that Jesus performed and John recorded that he saw, and he wrote them down for us that we could read about them and so that we could believe. You know, when you think about the Bible, I know most of you probably know this, but the Bible is really not so much a book as it is a collection of 66 different books, 39 of them in what we call the Old Testament, 27 of them in the New Testament. And the first four books in the New Testament we refer to as the Gospels, the Gospel accounts of the life of Jesus. And they're written by four individuals named Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew was one of the 12 apostles, the 12 closest disciples and followers of Jesus. Mark was a friend of a guy named Peter, who was another one of the disciples, actually became really in many ways the most significant in the early church of all those 12 closest to Jesus. Luke was actually a Greek doctor and historian that took upon the challenge, in his own words, as others have done, to write an account of the life and things concerning Jesus. And then John, who wrote the final gospel, it was actually written last after all the others were written. John was also one of the 12 disciples, one of the closest three, and actually in many ways he was the closest of all of them to Jesus. And when John writes his account of the life and the events of Christ, he strategically includes seven signs that Jesus performed. And these signs were more than just miracles. They were more than just unexplainable events. They were signs that Jesus performed that gave evidence and proof that he was more than just another man, that he was more than just another Jewish rabbi and teacher, because there were plenty of rabbis and teachers throughout Judea in Jesus' day. These signs that John saw with his own eyes that he wrote down for us to read about gave incredible evidence that Jesus was indeed the long-awaited Messiah, that he was the Christ, the Son of God. And so for the last 2 months, we've actually dedicated one Sunday to each of these seven signs, kind of made our way through them. We started a couple months ago. We looked at Jesus' very first sign that he ever performed, which was turning the water into wine. Right? And so for all of my Italian friends, you're like, that's a great sign right there, right? Well, it was more than just Jesus we saw performing a cool party trick. It was more than just him doing something kind of surprising and showing off a little bit. It was actually Jesus showing something to us about who he is and what he came to do, that he came to bring something new, do something new, and bring something better. We saw Jesus perform the sign of healing a man's dying son. We saw him heal another man that was lame but lying at a pool, the Pool of Bethesda, as it's called, because he could not walk and had not been able to walk for quite some time. We saw Jesus feed the 5,000 with just a few pieces of bread and fish. We saw him walk on water. We saw Jesus restoring sight to a man that was born blind. And last week wound all that up, looking at Jesus healing Lazarus by bringing his friend Lazarus back to life who had died. And John tells us that these signs that he writes about were by no means the only signs that Jesus did. In fact, he goes on to say that if we were to record everything Jesus said and everything Jesus did, he supposed that the entire world would not be able to contain all the volumes that you could write about everything Jesus said and did. But he does say this: I chose these seven for this reason. These signs were written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing that you would have life in his name. And so the reason Jesus performed them and John recorded them was to provide evidence through real events that gave this undeniable credibility to who Jesus was, and that everyone who would believe in Jesus would actually find true life. But there was one sign that Jesus performed that overshadowed all the others. Because along the way, every sign that he performed, you would find that some people followed, some people believed, and others turned and left and walked away. Some people believed, some people did not believe. But there was one sign that caused everybody who witnessed it to believe. Those who were following him, those who thought he was the Messiah already, and even some of those who thought he was a fraud, that were the deepest skeptics about anything Jesus ever had to say, the most significant sign that Jesus performed that stood out above everything else that convinced them that he actually was the Son of God was the resurrection of Christ. Now, if somebody were to ask you, or if, let's say I were to ask you this morning, what is the Christian understanding or the Christian doctrine of resurrection? If I were to ask you that and you were to give it an answer, I think most of us would probably give an answer something like this. It's actually pretty simple. It's that Jesus was crucified and killed. And after he died, he was buried in a tomb. And 3 days after he was buried in that tomb, he was raised back to life by the power of God. That's probably the most common response people would give. And if you were to give me that response to that question, I would look at you and say, that is absolutely a great start. But it's not all that there is to the resurrection of Christ. It's a great start, but it's not all of it. Because when you think about and really dive in to what it means that Christ was raised, the resurrection of Jesus has two very distinct and very important parts to it, and you really have to understand them both. And that is this, that the resurrection of Jesus is both an event to believe and it's a belief to experience. It is an event to believe and it is a belief to experience. And what you'll find is that it's actually possible to understand one of these about the resurrection without understanding or believing the other, but to do that actually leaves you with an incomplete understanding of Jesus and what he came to do. For example, let's say that you think of the resurrection as just kind of a symbolic understanding or a symbolic idea. It did not literally happen. Jesus did not physically walk out of a grave. He wasn't literally raised from the dead, but it's just the Bible's symbolic analogy to describe new beginnings and second chances and a fresh start and how God can pick you up when you're down and do something new and different in your life. To think of the resurrection only in those terms without thinking of it as an event that actually happened is actually to reduce the power of God to nothing more than a philosophy or an ideology, of which there are plenty in the world. To say that it actually didn't happen, but it's just the Bible's description that God can make your life a little better, it's really reducing God and reducing the gospel and reducing Jesus just to another philosophy. But on the other hand, let's say that you think of it as something that did actually happen. No, I believe it actually happened. It's a true historical, a physical event. But to not experience the power of that resurrection in your own life is to, again, reduce what Jesus did to just another religion. A religion that's devoid of power, that's devoid of substance, that's devoid of any real purpose or life change. And so while it's possible to believe in the resurrection of Jesus, only having a partial understanding that I believe it happened, but I haven't really experienced it, or to believe it's something that you can experience but didn't actually happen, is actually to only have a partial view of what Jesus came to do. And so my question to you today is, do you know Easter as both? Do you know Easter as both an event that actually literally physically happened, and because it literally actually physically happened, that it also is a belief that you can experience in your own life, God raising things in you that were dead, God overcoming death in you and giving you true life? Do you believe it as both? Because true Christianity is both. That you would move from just believing it happened to inviting the power of that into your own life. And so in the time I've got left this morning, here's what I want to do today. I want to walk through these two ideas. That the resurrection of Jesus is both an event to believe and it is a belief to experience. But I want to walk through them through the eyes of those who were there, specifically and primarily through John's gospel account of the things he saw and the things he wrote down that we would see them and believe. So first, let's talk about this idea that the resurrection of Jesus is an actual event to believe in, that it physically, literally, actually happened. Right after Jesus was crucified, a guy named Joseph of Arimathea, that's just where he was from, Joseph goes before Pilate. A Pilate is the Roman official who is ruling Judea and Jerusalem on behalf of the emperor of Rome at this time. Joseph of Arimathea goes before Pilate and he requests the body of Jesus, that he can take it down from the cross, that he could bury it, because Joseph was actually a follower and a believer of Christ. And so Pilate agrees, and Joseph and this guy named Nicodemus, which I wish I had time to go into his story because it's a pretty remarkable story as well, but Joseph and Nicodemus, they take Jesus' body down from the cross, they take it to a tomb that had never been used before, and they wrap his body in burial clothes, and they lay him in the tomb, they kind of spread some spices and flowers and things that they would do in that day over his body. Essentially, they're embalming the body of Jesus. And then when they finish that, upon the order of Pilate, a very large stone is rolled in front of the entrance of the tomb, and they leave. Now, do you know why Joseph and Nicodemus put so much energy and effort into preparing Jesus' body for burial? It's because the followers of Jesus expected Jesus to do what every other dead person does: stay dead. They expected that he was dead for good. They expected that he was in that tomb and he would stay there. There's none of the disciples running around going, you know what, guys, let's not worry about this. He's going to be alive in 3 days anyway. Like nobody's saying that. Nobody said to Joseph, you know what, tell you what, why don't we just leave him on the cross? Because when he comes back to life in 3 days, when he comes back to life on that cross and everybody can see, that'll get some attention right there. Let's just leave him right there. Nobody's saying that. There's not a single disciple standing outside of the tomb on that morning counting down from 10. Nobody's going 10, 9, 8, cue the thunder, 7, 6, 5, cue the smoke and the lights, 4. Like, nobody's doing that. None of them expected him to walk out of that grave. There is not a single person there. And it wasn't just some of them that expected him to stay dead. All of them expected it. And we know that because of what John writes in his gospel. He writes this about that day, that first day of the week. Now, on the first day of the week, which is the day he was raised. Incidentally, just a little side note, this is why the church for 2,000 years has gathered on Sundays, by the way, on the first day of the week, not because we're commanded to, but because it's a marker, a celebration of what happened on that first day of the week 2,000 years ago. But on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early while it was still dark and saw the stone had been taken away from the tomb. And so she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved. That's referring to John that wrote this, by the way. And he said to them, they have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they've laid him. Now notice in these verses what it does not say. It does not say on the first day of the week, Mary was running or went to the tomb and the other disciples and they were waiting outside of the tomb for Jesus. It doesn't say that, does it? It doesn't say that they were waiting. They weren't outside waiting for him. It also does not say when it comes to Mary, when she leaves and runs to the other disciples, it does not say this about Mary. It doesn't say Mary ran to Peter and the other disciples and said, it's happened. Jesus is risen. It's not what it says. Remember what it did say? What it did say is that they've taken the Lord out of the tomb and we do not know what in the world is going on. We don't know where Jesus is. We don't know who did it. We don't know what happened. All I know is I showed up at the tomb, the stone was gone, I went in, Jesus is gone. We have no idea what happened. No one expected Jesus to rise. Which is why later that day, that same first day of the week, all of the disciples are together and they have locked themselves inside of a house because they were afraid that the same people that arrested Jesus and crucified Jesus were still coming after them. And so they're inside of a house, the doors are locked, when all of a sudden Jesus appears and is standing in their midst inside that house. And it says that when Jesus speaks to them, it scared them to death, right? In fact, here's how Luke records it in his gospel. He says that as they were talking about these things, what things? Well, the fact that the stone was gone and Jesus was gone and none of the disciples know what in the world is going on, all right? They're talking about all of this. When they were talking about these things, Jesus himself stood among them and he said to them, "Peace to you." But they were startled and frightened and thought they saw a spirit. Now, I want to talk about these last three words right here: startled, frightened, and spirit. Probably a better translation of spirit would be ghost. All right? And you're not thinking like, you know, whatever friendly ghost in whatever movie, Casper or Harry Potter or whatever else. It's not like some friendly ghost they're thinking of. Like it's like this demonic spirit is what they think is in the room. And you know that because of these other two words, startled and frightened. It wasn't that Jesus said, "Peace to you," and they're like, "Oh, Jesus, you startled me." I mean, they may have said Jesus, but it wasn't that way. You know what I'm saying? These two words literally mean they were terrified and they shuddered in fear. That's what those two words means. That's what those two, they shuddered and they were terrified. They were shaking because they thought they were seeing a ghost. And Luke records, here's what Jesus says to them. He said to them, why are you troubled and why do doubts arise in your heart? See my hands and see my feet. It's me. Touch me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see that I have. Now, why does Luke record this detail that Jesus said these things? I think it's because he's making the point that Jesus' resurrection was an actual event to believe in, that it literally happened. But the fact that it happened carried more with it than just knowing that it happened. The fact that it actually happened also meant that there was something much more to experience. And here's what I mean by that. That day that Jesus appears to the disciples, the day that he rose, appears in that room that's locked to the disciples. There's one of the disciples, a very important figure of the disciples, that was not with them that day. He was absent. Anyone remember who was not there? Thomas, that's right. One of the disciples named Thomas was absent. And so later on that day, the disciples that were there that saw Jesus, they catch up with Thomas. They're like, Thomas, you're not going to believe what just happened, man. We were all in the house. The doors were locked. And all of a sudden, Jesus, he's there. He's talking to us. We touch him. We saw him. We hugged him. He's alive. And you know what Thomas did? Thomas did exactly what you and I would have done if we were Thomas. He looks at them and says, you're insane. Like, how much of that wine Jesus made at that wedding way back have you been drinking today? That's what he's thinking, right? And we know that because here's what Thomas says about believing what the disciples have said they just saw. Here's how he responds to this. Unless I see in his hands the mark of the nails and to place my finger into the marks of the nails and place my hand into his side, I will never believe. Now, this is from a guy who just spent 3 years watching Jesus perform sign after sign after sign after sign, and not just seven of them, so many of them, as John said, that you couldn't even record them all. This is a guy who said, I've seen Jesus heal people. I've seen Jesus feed people. I've seen Jesus raise people back to life. But sorry, I can't bring myself to believe that he actually has been raised either. But about a week later, John records that the disciples are together again, and they're in a house again, and they have the doors locked again, because even though some of them have seen Jesus and believed, others of them were not yet convinced, but all of them were still afraid that they were next to be crucified. And then John records this detail as they're in that house that night, that Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. And then he said to Thomas, and Thomas had to be thinking, uh-oh. He says to Thomas, put your finger here and see my hands, and put your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe. And at that moment, the resurrection of Jesus from the grave became real to Thomas, and Thomas believed. But believing in the event of the resurrection was not the end of it. Believing in the event of the resurrection caused Thomas to experience a different belief that he was not expecting. And John describes it this way. Thomas says to Jesus in response to this, my Lord and my God. My Lord and my God. The event of Jesus' resurrection caused Thomas to do more than just believe that it actually happened. It caused him to experience Jesus in a way he never had before as his Lord and his God. And in that moment, that is when the resurrection for Thomas became not just an event to believe, it became a belief to experience. So what does it mean to experience what you believe about Jesus? One of the most common mistakes I think so many of us make when it comes to being a Christian is that we confuse the information that we know about God with actually knowing God. That we confuse all of the information and all the teachings and all the Bible verses and all the doctrine and all the theology that we know about God, and we confuse that with the power of actually knowing God. The Apostle Paul wrote about it this way one time in one of his letters. He says that I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection. I don't want to just know about Jesus. I don't just want to know about what he did and about what he said. And I don't just want to know what those things might mean. I want to know him, and I want to know the power that is possible because he was raised from the grave. Now, what does that mean? That Paul wants to know the power of Christ's resurrection. It means that there is a powerful life change that occurs in the life of a person that doesn't just know about God, but actually knows Christ. There's a powerful life change occurs when we move from just believing that Jesus' resurrection was an event that happened to actually experiencing the power of that event. I mean, here's just some of the things Jesus said would happen when we experience the power of him being raised from the grave. He says, "Peace I leave with you." These are Jesus' words. "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. So let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." You know, if the last year has taught us anything, it is that the world does not offer lasting peace. Anybody in here agree with that? And just because today is good and today is peaceful and it's headed in the direction that I want, it does not mean that tomorrow is going to be the same. This world has a peace to offer you, but it is not a peace that lasts. It is a temporary peace at best. And Jesus said, "I offer a peace that is different than the world's. It's not here today and gone tomorrow. My resurrection offers a lasting peace that lets your heart not be troubled and afraid, even when you're experiencing trouble and things that make you afraid. My power in you, my resurrection power, lets you take your fears and your troubles and put them in their proper place. Not that you'll never have trouble. In fact, Jesus said the opposite. In this life, you're going to have plenty of it. Doesn't mean that you're never going to be afraid. We're going to have things that we fear, but the power of Jesus lets you take those things, put them in their proper place, and live with his peace at the center of your life. And friends, that is something the world can never, ever offer you and never offer me. How many of you in this room have ever experienced that kind of lasting, unexplainable peace with Jesus in the midst of trouble? Anybody in this room? Four of us? Anybody in this room? Seriously, anybody in this room ever experienced that? I thought it was a little bit more than that. I hope it's a little bit more than that. If not, I'm going to be preaching a little bit longer today. Jesus said this in another place in John chapter 10, that the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I came that you would have life and have it abundantly. Friends, you need to know there is an enemy in this world that is at work to steal every life-giving gift that God ever gave you. And for those of us that belong to Jesus already, he's lost that battle. And so he's going to be at work overtime to do everything he can to steal everything else that gives you life, to make you miserable, to live, make you live without peace and without joy and without purpose and questioning God and all kinds of things. The enemy comes only to steal from you, to kill what is good in you, and to destroy every life-giving gift God ever gave you. But Jesus says, here's why I came, to give you life and have it abundantly. By my resurrection, Jesus says, I will overcome the things that overcome you. I will kill the things that try to kill you. I'm going to destroy the things that try to destroy you, and I'm going to give you life everlasting. That's what my resurrection power does. That day when he's raising Lazarus, that story we looked at last week, and Jesus' sisters that are so upset with Jesus, if you'd been here, Jesus, this would not have happened. Remember that? And Jesus looks at Martha and he says to her, hey, just remember this. I'm the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Here's the beauty of the life Jesus offers. It is not short-lived. It is not temporary. Jesus says, I'm not just offering you a good season, a few good days, a few good experiences. I'm offering an eternity of life. And if you're wondering how the resurrection of Jesus accomplishes that in your life, here's how. It's by making you new. The Bible tells us this in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, that anyone who belongs to Christ, what a promise this is, anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone and a new life has begun. And all of this is a gift from God who brought us back to himself through Christ. Anyone in whom Christ has been made new. That is the power of the resurrection of Jesus. And you know, this morning, we're going to witness people testifying that that has happened in their life in just a minute. We're going to witness people testifying that their life has been made new by the resurrection power of Jesus. And they're going to make this confession to everybody here through what we refer to as baptism. Baptism is something that Jesus invited everybody to do who would believe in him as an outward, visible expression of what his resurrection power has done inwardly inside of them. That just as Jesus died and was buried and raised by the power of God, so too everyone that would believe in Jesus, our old life, our old nature, our sin would be crucified with Christ. It would be buried and we'd be raised to walk in a new life. Everyone who would believe in him, we would experience the same thing, that their life of brokenness and sin would be put to death and buried and you would be made new. Between all of our services this morning, I think we have 20 different people that are testifying to this through baptism today. The life change that happens when Jesus moves from just being a figure in history, or even I move from just believing in the event of his resurrection to experiencing the power of his resurrection in my life. And so I want to ask you this question again this morning. When it comes to the resurrection of Jesus, do you know the resurrection of Jesus as both an event to believe and a belief to experience? Because to believe in the resurrection as only a figurative, symbolic gesture of the Bible is to devoid God of any real power to overcome sin, to overcome death. And listen, that's one of the most amazing things God proved through the cross, was that death that is the result of this broken world we live in ain't got nothing on God. I'm going to overcome death and I'm going to bring it back to life. It literally physically happened. But then to believe that the resurrection happened, but to not believe that Christ's power and not receive the power of Christ into my life just means I've got a religion that doesn't have any real power. The resurrection of Jesus is both, and it's an event to believe and a belief to experience. And so how does the resurrection of Jesus move from just being an event you believe in that actually happened to being a power that I experience? When I thought about how to close this out and how to explain that, I decided to make it as simple as I can and to just use the words of Jesus himself in what might be the most famous of all the statements ever recorded that he ever made in the scriptures. It's recorded in John's gospel. Jesus said this, "For God so loved you. For God so loved me. For God so loved this world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him would not perish, but have eternal life." And here's why. Because God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him. Isn't it amazing to know that we serve a God that stepped into the brokenness of this world, that steps into your life and into mine, all of our sin, all of our mistakes, all of our rebellion, all of our misunderstandings, all of the dumb, ridiculous, stupid things we have ever done in our life. God steps in to history in the form of Jesus, not to condemn us. He already stood condemned. He stepped into history to save us from that condemnation and by giving us true life. And so I want to ask you this morning, do you know Jesus? And do you know Jesus' resurrection as both an event to believe and a belief to experience? Have you experienced it yourself? I want to ask you to bow your heads and I want to pray for us. And as your heads are bowed, as I get ready to pray, I just want to say this morning, if you want to believe, if you are at that point of, I want to believe, I do believe, yes, God, apply what Jesus did on the cross to me. Then where you're seated this morning, just acknowledge that to God. God, I've got lots of questions. There's parts of this that I don't fully understand. But I believe that your son came to this earth for me, that he died, was buried, and raised. The signs that he did prove it. And I want to experience the power of his resurrection in my life. God, I believe. Father in heaven, thank you for the truth of your word that we have in the scriptures. Thank you that you inspired John to write down the signs that he did, that he witnessed with his own eyes that so many others saw. It gave evidence that Jesus was more than just a man and more than a teacher and more than a rabbi, that he was the Son of God, our Savior. And God, I pray for those this morning that maybe for the very first time have allowed themselves to believe. Not just that Jesus was raised, but to believe that that power that raised him from the grave can be applied to their life. God, save them, redeem them, forgive them, receive them, give them true life. And for all of us in this room that follow you, that already believe, God, may our belief in you not be reduced to just a series of doctrines and theologies and beliefs and information. But God, take all the information that we know about your Son and everything that we've understood and everything that we believe. And may we experience the power of Christ every day in our life like we did the day we first believed. Thank you for those that are testifying this morning that you have saved them, that you have made them new through baptism. Bless them. Make yourself real to them. God, we worship you. We love you. It's in your Son, Jesus' name, that we pray.